10:45 on the clock back there, so we'll go ahead and get started today. So this is 30 seconds. Great. We should be on 8. This should be Judges Session 8. It's kind of the continuation of Samson. All right, we're good to go. So this is Judges. I do believe it's Session 8. This is the second part on the Samson series. And so we're going to go ahead and get started with this. If you have missed a few times, all of this is on YouTube. If you go to the Lampstand website, lampstandpc.org, you can go to the Bible Studies tab, and there's a copy of the digital notes. In the digital notes, there's a link to the YouTube where you can find all of this that has the slides and the commentary all together in one package. So we'll go ahead and get started today, and we'll open with a word of prayer. So Jesus, I thank you that you allow us to get together and to study your word. I ask that during this time you would open your word to us, that we may know it, understand it, and come to appreciate it and be molded more and more into your likeness through it. I pray also for myself personally that you would empower me by your spirit to speak what is of you, and anything that is not of you would just fall to the ground. And so we thank you and ask you to be with us this day. Amen. Okay, Samson. By this time in Judges, it is a broken record. We get it. It's the downward spiral. Things keep getting worse and worse and worse. It's almost monotonous at this point. How much worse can it get? We're clear on the trajectory that Israel is going. It just keeps getting worse. So how could it get any worse? All right, let's go to the next slide. Samson will show us how it can get worse. So, how many times is Yahweh mentioned in the Samson story? At the very beginning, when he has the encounter with Samson's parents, quite a lot. But after that, he's not really mentioned much at all. Basically, not enough. Is Yahweh glorified by Samson? Like, does Samson try and glorify Yahweh? The answer is no. Yahweh is used more like a lucky rabbit's foot for Samson so that Samson can get what he wants in his times of distress. And we're going to see that here. Yes, we're going to see that here today at the end of chapter 15. That's kind of how Samson treats Yahweh. So let's go to the next slide, please. Samson is set apart. He's a Nazirite from birth. He has the Nazirite vows, and he's also an Israelite. And so with this come certain implications, yet Samson doesn't care. He violates his Nazirite vows by handling the lion's corpse. And by going after a foreign woman, he violates what it is to be an Israelite man, where you stay within your own people group. And so we see this happening. We see that Israel is reaping what they have sown. Samson really is the fruit of Israel, because Israel has been sowing these things up until this point. We've seen that in Judges. And now it is no surprise that Israel's leader, the one even appointed by Yahweh himself, is acting just like this, because Israel is reaping what they have sown. Samson is that fruit. And we see that the downward spiral continues and it worsens, because Samson is just an individual, but he sort of is a picture of what Israel is doing on a corporate scale. And we're going to see this going into the epilogue for next time, of the tribe of Dan is way out of place, and they're not doing what they're supposed to do. They form their own religion, and so it just gets really, 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 really bad. So let's go on to the next slide. So, let's jump into the scripture here. We're in Judges chapter 15. We have quite a bit to cover today, so I'm probably just going to... I really won't be able to read everything. I'm just going to highlight some things so that we can learn some stuff from here. So, Samson, he is like a hammer in the hand of God. He's like a brute beast. He doesn't really understand what's going on. And we see this again here at the beginning of chapter 15. So 15 verse 1. After a while, at the time of the wheat harvest, Samson went to visit his wife, bringing along a kid. So he still thinks he's married. He said, I want to go into my wife's room. But her father would not allow him to go in. Her father said, I was sure that you had rejected her, so I gave her to your companion. What a picture of how the world deals with things. Is not her younger sister prettier than she? Why not take her instead? Again, what a worldly way to deal with things. Take her younger sister. Verse 3, Samson said to them, this time, when I do mischief to the Philistines, I will be without blame. So what does Samson do? He goes and he catches 300 foxes and took torches and he tied the foxes' tails together and put the torches in the tails and sent them off into the Philistines' fields to burn them down. Because remember, the very first verse in chapter 15, it's the wheat harvest. And so he burns it down. Now this should remind you of Gideon, because what did Gideon do with the 300 men? They had 300 men with torches and trumpets. These things are all being tied together because the writer of Judges wants you to look at this as a whole and not just kind of in bite-sized pieces. Although there's stuff you can learn from the bite-sized pieces. But here you have 300 people with torches or 300 foxes with torches. It's supposed to remind you of the Gideon story. But what does Samson do? Something extremely stupid. If you really want to upset someone, hit them in their pocketbook. That's what Samson's doing right here. He's going at the time of the wheat harvest and burning all of their harvest down to the ground. That's not a very smart thing to do unless you're looking for trouble, because then you are going to get trouble. And so what happens? The Philistines asked, this is verse 6, who has done this? And they said, Samson, the son-in-law of the Timnite, because he had taken Samson's wife and given her to his companion. So the Philistines came up and burned her and her father. I want to pause right there. Remember back in chapter 14, when Samson was getting married, he put the riddle to them, and and the people he was putting the riddle to forced Samson's wife to betray him. And they said, if you don't do it, we are going to burn your house and your father's house. I'm trying to find the verse here. Verse 15, it looks like. Yeah, coax your husband to explain the riddle to us. This is chapter 14, verse 15. Or we will burn you and your father's house with fire. Well, what did they do here? In chapter 15, verse 6. They came up and burned her and her father. The world does not keep its word. And they do whatever they want. And here you have Samson's wife obeying what they said. And then they went and burned her and her father's house anyways. This is how this stuff works. This is how brutality, treachery, and cunning work. And it's this back and forth between Gideon and the Philistines. And it's going to get out of control. And so Samson and the Philistines. Samson here feels justified because he had given his wife away, so now he's going to destroy a lot of what the Philistines have. And so then what happens? So the Philistines came up, they burned her father's house, and Samson said, verse 7, if this is what you do, I swear I will not stop until I've taken revenge on you. Verse 8, he struck them down hip and thigh with great slaughter, and he went down and stayed in the cleft of the rock at Edom. So what's happening here? This back and forth, back and forth. You did this to me, now I'm going to do this to you. Oh, you did this just to me, now I'm going to return the favor and do this back to you. And there's just this back and forth, back and forth, everyone being a victim, and then Samson runs away and hides in a cave. Sounds like the way the world deals with things. And here it is. The brutality, the treachery, and the cunning. We see it happening here. This is the way the world works. We see it happening with Samson's wife and her getting burned anyways, even though she did what they wanted her to do. And so things are escalating. And now it's not just on Samson, it's now on the people of Israel. Verse 9, the Philistines came up and encamped in Judah and made a raid on Lehi. Now remember, Judah and the Israelites are already under Philistine rule. They're probably paying tribute of some kind. So for the Philistines to come and make a raid on land, it's kind of like, you know, a master beating a slave, and the slave's like, I'm already your slave. Why are you beating me? I'm doing what you want. Like, it doesn't make sense, right? So the men in Judah said, why have you come up against us? Right? We're already paying you stuff. You know that you rule over us. Why have you come up against us? They said, we have come up to bind Samson and to do to him as he did to us. Verse 11. Then 3,000 men of Judah. Why would you need 3,000 men? Because Samson has the spirit of Yahweh, and they know who Samson is. If it was just a normal guy, yeah, you send 10 people. But here they sent 3,000 men of Judah, probably to intimidate Samson. Then 3,000 men of Judah went down to the cleft of the rock at Edom, and they said to Samson, do you not know that the Philistines are rulers over us? What then have you done to us? He replied, as they did to me, so I have done to them. Oh, come on. That's just blame, 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 blame. Verse 12, they said to him, we have come down to bind you so that we may give you into the hands of the Philistines. Look at what the Israelites are doing. This is their anointed judge who is going to deliver them. They are willingly handing him over to the enemy. This is how far down the downward spiral we are, that God's anointed leader is given over to the enemy. Instead of rallying behind him, he's given up. Then Samson says, swear to me that you yourselves will not attack me. Like, you guys don't kill me, please. Verse 13, they answered Samson. They said to him, no, we will only bind you and give you into their hands. We will not kill you. So they bound him with two new ropes and brought him up from the rock. When he came to Lehi, the Philistines came shouting to meet him, and the Spirit of Yahweh rushed on him. So here we have an appearance of Yahweh, the Spirit of Yahweh, but it's not Samson crying out to him. It's not the people crying out to him. It's not God speaking to them. It's not the angel of Yahweh. It is the Spirit of Yahweh coming on Samson because he is a brute beast. He is a hammer, and God takes his hammer and he smashes things with it. The Spirit of Yahweh came on Samson, and the ropes that were in his arms became like flax that had caught fire. Why? Because his name means little son, and you cannot bind fire. So his bonds melted off of his hands. Verse 15, then he found a fresh jawbone of a donkey. A fresh jawbone of a donkey. It's only a fresh jawbone because the donkey is dead. Here you go again, Samson, handling a corpse when you're not supposed to. Because he's like a brute beast. But God still uses anyone and everyone for his will because he's the sovereign king of the universe. Verse 15, then he found a fresh jawbone of a donkey, reached down and took it, and with it he killed 1,000 men. Well, it makes a little more sense why 3,000 men of Judah came down, because Samson just killed 1,000 Philistines with the jawbone of a donkey. This guy was a warrior. And Samson said, look at what he says. Is this a man who fears Yahweh? Ask yourself that question, thinking about it as I read this. With the jawbone of a donkey, heaps upon heaps, with the jawbone of a donkey, I have slain 1,000 men. Perfect time to praise Yahweh for the spirit of him rushing on you and for delivering you up out of the hands of the Philistines, but we don't find it. But who knows? Maybe Samson will try something new. Let's keep reading on. Verse 17. When he had finished speaking, he threw away the jawbone, and that place was called Ramoth Lehi. By then he was very thirsty, and he called on Yahweh. Oh, we have an opportunity. By then he was very thirsty, and he called on Yahweh, this is verse 18, saying, you have granted this great victory by the hand of your servant. Okay, I'm liking what I'm hearing. Am I now to die of thirst and to fall into the hands of the uncircumcised? Oh, Samson, you had an opportunity, buddy. But it's about you being thirsty. That's why you're calling out on Yahweh. In your time of distress, God help me. But God is not intimidated by our misunderstandings or our pride. What does God do? Verse 19. So God split open the hollow place that is at Lehi, and water came from it. When he drank, his spirit returned and he revived. Therefore it is named En Hakkor, which is at Lehi to this day, and he judged Israel in the days of the Philistines 20 years. What did God do? Just like he did with his people who were stubborn and stiff-necked in the wilderness, he brought water where there was no water. And he took care of his people, just like he took care of Samson. Even though Samson saying these things and God heeding it would only hardens Samson's heart more into thinking he can treat God this way. But God's not intimidated by that. And so he quenches Samson's thirst, because God is good. And he is the one in control. He is the one in control here. So one of the things we see is that the men of Judah give up Samson. This is their own king. It's like the Wild West out there. No one has regard for anyone else, and God is silent. You don't hear him on the lips of the people, except for this one time when Samson has this problem he can't solve himself. Then he goes to God, which is not the right way to do it. You pray first. You don't say, oh, well, there's nothing left to do. Let's just pray. No, you pray first. But here we have it. It's like the Wild West out there, and we see things happening just like that. And so Samson, after he has this great victory, he calls upon Yahweh to give him glory. No, it was to satisfy his own thirst. Let me flip over to Titus real quick, if I can find it fast. Here we go. Titus chapter 1, verse 16. They profess to know God. This is Paul talking to Titus, who is a young leader in the church. They profess to know God, but they deny him by their actions. That's what Samson does. God is on his lips, but by the way he lives his life, he shows that he does not know God. So Samson is like a hammer in the hand of God, and God has delivered up Israel out of the hands of the Philistines so far and struck down 1,000 of them by his mighty hammer. And Samson is the one who gets pounded again and again, because instead of partnering with God, he decides just to be used by God. And it's a little bit more painful to be used by God instead of partnering with him. All right, let's go to the next slide, please. So here's the famous Samson and Delilah story. So we just had this huge back and forth with Samson and the Philistines. And we see that Samson is only thinking about himself. But he's had all these things happen to him, right? He's had all these experiences. He's seen God come through to him, even in a very special way of opening up a dry place and bringing water to satisfy him. So what is Samson's next move? Remember what just happened. And also in chapter 14 about his marriage. So what's Samson's next move? You gotta love it. Chapter 16, verse 1. Once Samson went to Gaza. You know where Gaza is? It is a Philistine stronghold along the coast. Has Samson learned anything? Oh, but it gets better. Samson went to Gaza, where he saw a prostitute and went into her. Not even a woman to marry like before in chapter 14 when he saw the woman at Timnah and said, oh, she pleases me, father and mother, go get her as a wife. No, Samson goes down to Gaza further into Philistine territory and he sees a prostitute and says, I got a great idea. Samson, you're not learning anything. You literally are like a brute beast. You just had all of this heartache and pain happen because you pursued a foreign woman as a wife. And now you're going deeper into foreign territory and you're looking at a prostitute. I can tell you exactly how this story is going to end. Because it's the downward spiral. And when we choose to reject Yahweh as king over our life, this is what happens. Samson went to Gaza where he saw a prostitute and went into her. I mean, at this point, this is just like a broken record. Just keeps skipping over and over again. I'm getting almost annoyed teaching it like this because it's like, I think we get it by now. It's the downward spiral. Things are just getting out of control and it keeps getting worse and worse. You have God's anointed leader, the deliverer, who just had this foible in chapter 14 where he went after a foreign wife and it blew up in his face. And now God's anointed leader, because as goes the leadership, go the people. God's anointed leader now is deeper in enemy territory, going after a prostitute. How is this not a picture of what Israel has sown up until this point? Because remember what we talked about a couple times ago in Galatians. God is not mocked. You reap whatever you sow. And here we see Israel reaping what it has sown in that its leader is leading it in the way that is not right, whereas the leaders previous sort of kind of got it right, but then eventually went wrong. Now it's just from the get-go starting out wrong. This isn't good. This isn't good. So what happens, Samson? We'll give you the benefit of the doubt. Let's just keep going. The Gazites were told, Samson has come here. So they circled around and lay in wait for him all night at the city gate. They kept quiet all night, thinking, let us wait until the light of morning, then we will kill him. But Samson lay only to midnight, and at midnight he rose up, and basically he took the gates of the city on his shoulders and took them up to the top of the hill, basically flipping those people the bird. You know, you can't get me, I'm Samson, don't you know that? And then what do we read? Verse 4. After this, he fell in love with a woman in the valley of Sorek whose name was Delilah. We know where this is going. He fell in love. I'm glad, Samson. Maybe you can have a little bit of joy in your life or whatever you want to call that, because it's going to get real painful for you real quick. The lords of the Philistines, verse 5, the lords of the Philistines came to her and said to her, coax him. Oh, we haven't heard this before. Hey, the person that loves Samson, we want to use you to trap Samson. We haven't heard this before. Coax him and find out what makes his strength so great and how we may overpower him so that we may bind him in order to subdue him, and we will each give you 1,100 pieces of silver. Because what does a prostitute want? Your love? No, money. Your wife wants love. But a prostitute, her fee is a loaf of bread. It says that in Proverbs somewhere. It's one of my favorite scriptures as a young man. A prostitute's fee is a loaf of bread, but the wife of another man seeks your very life. And so what does this prostitute want? Money. What is she going to get from the Philistines? A lot of money. Samson's already defeated. He just doesn't know it yet. And so we see here, earlier he had a foreign wife. Now he's seeking a foreign prostitute. And what should we expect? The same thing's going to happen again, but it's going to be to a more severe degree, because this is the nature of the downward spiral. It's a repeat of the pattern, but it's going somewhere. It has a trajectory, and that trajectory is no God. This is what is happening to Samson's life when Yahweh is not present in it, when he's not acknowledging it. Yahweh, when he's not living according to Yahweh's principles. And so it gets worse and worse and worse. And we're going to see here in the back and forth between Samson and Delilah, we're going to see this brutality, this treachery, and this cunning come full circle for Samson. Because Samson's going to mock her, but she's going to betray him. And Samson, he's going to get his eyes gouged out. Just like what happened, or in the same manner as what happened in the very beginning of Judges. You guys remember Adonai Bezek, who cut off the king's big thumbs, or their thumbs and their big toes? Samson's going to become just like that, another foreign king. He's going to become defeated just like another foreign king. So let's keep reading on here. Verse 6 of chapter 16. So Delilah said to Samson, please tell me what makes your strength so great and how you could be bound so that one could subdue you. Could you get any more blatant of, I want to betray you, please tell me how? But Samson, what does he do? So arrogant, he says, okay. Verse 7, Samson said to her, if they, dead giveaway right there, Samson. If they bind me with 7 fresh bowstrings that are not dried out, then I shall become weak like anyone else. Then the lords of the Philistines brought her 7 fresh bowstrings that had not dried out, and she bound him with them. While men were lying in wait in the inner chamber, she said to them, the Philistines are upon you, Samson! But he snapped the bowstrings as a strand of fiber snaps when it touches fire. Why? Because his name is Little Son, and you cannot bind fire. So the secret of his strength was unknown. Samson's mocking her. He knows where his strength is. She doesn't. He's getting what he wants in the meantime, and she really is openly betraying him. Verse 10, Then Delilah said to Samson, "You have mocked me and told me lies. Please tell me how you could be bound." Verse 11, he said to her, "If they bind me with new ropes that have not been used, then I shall become weak and be like anyone else." So Delilah took new ropes and bound him with them and said to him, "The Philistines are upon you." The men lying in wait were in the inner chamber. But he snapped the ropes off his arms like a thread. Then Delilah said to Samson, "Until now you have mocked me and told me lies. Tell me how you could be bound." And so here we go again, this back and forth. She's openly betraying him, but he keeps mocking her because his secret is hidden. But Samson has a flaw. He cannot keep himself from women. Where are we here? Verse 13. "You've mocked me and told me lies. How could you be bound?" He said to her, "If you weave the seven locks of my head with the web and make it tight with the pin, then I shall become weak and be like anyone else." So we're getting closer here. Verse 14. So while he slept, notice here, Samson is in the dark about what is happening. He's sleeping. Just like his parents were in the dark earlier in the story because he shows no authority to them. Now Samson is reaping what he's sown. These things are happening without him even knowing, without anyone even telling him. So while he slept, Delilah took the seven locks of his head, this is verse 14, and wove them into a web and made them tight with the pin. Then she said to him, "The Philistines are upon you, Samson." But he awoke from his sleep and pulled away the pin, the loom, and the web. Oh, we got to hurry up here. Verse 15, then she said to him, How can you say I love you when your heart is not with me? You have mocked me these three times now and not told me what makes your strength so great." Samson has a weakness and Delilah knows it. Who's the strong one here? The woman. We've seen this in Judges all throughout. The women are the shrewd ones who get things done. The men don't. Verse 16, finally, after she had nagged him with her words day after day and pestered him, he was tired to death. Samson lost the war of attrition. So he told her his whole secret and said to her, "A razor has never come upon my head, for I have been a Nazarite to God from my mother's womb. If my head were shaved and my strength would leave me, I would become weak and be like anyone else." When Delilah realized he had told her his whole secret, she sent and called to the lords of the Philistines. So here it comes. Samson is betrayed. Verse 19, she let him fall asleep in her lap. Again, he is in the dark when these things are happening. He's unaware. She called and had a man, and they shaved his head, and he began to grow weak. Verse 20 now. Then she said, "The Philistines are upon you, Samson." When he awoke from his sleep, he thought, "I'll go out as the other times and shake myself free." But he did not know that Yahweh had left him. Samson has betrayed Yahweh up until this point in his life, not paying him any heed. And isn't it interesting that in his time of need, Yahweh's not there? You reap what you sow. God is not mocked. He has been sending the signal to Yahweh, "I want to have nothing to do with you except in my time of crisis." And God said, "Okay, you will have nothing to do with me." And Yahweh left him. One of the things throughout Scripture that you're going to notice, especially building up in the Old Testament, moving forward, is when God says, "I am with you," that is all you need. That is the strongest statement that God could ever say to you. "I am with you." So when you read, Yahweh has left him, Samson is without hope. There's nothing for him. He's a dead man walking. Because if God is with you, you can face or do anything. That's why we're temples of the Holy Spirit and He indwells us. But if Yahweh leaves you, oh, you're no different than any other part of creation. And Samson, as we are learning, has not ever acted like a true Israelite king. Remember, we looked at that, Deuteronomy 17. Samson has acted like a Philistine king. And isn't it surprising, or is really no surprising, that he then gets treated like one. And he then dies with the rest of the Philistines. So Samson's hair has been shaven. He doesn't realize that Yahweh has left him. And now the Philistines seized him and gouged out his eyes. And they brought him down to Gaza, bound in shackles, and he ground at the mill in the prison. That's the life you live without Yahweh. You're grinding at the mill in the prison. Verse 23. Now the lords of the Philistines gathered to offer a great sacrifice to their god Dagon and to rejoice, for they said, "Our God has given Samson, our enemy, into our hand." Why wouldn't they rejoice? Yahweh's people do the exact same thing. They rejoice and give sacrifice because God has given a great victory. So we read here that the Philistines do the same thing. It's not surprising, but they are wrong. It is not their god Dagon who has given Samson into their hand. Yahweh himself, the sovereign king of Israel, has given up his anointed leader to the hands of the Philistines because Yahweh is the only sovereign king of all the universe. So they are mistaken in their theology, but God is not intimidated by their mistaken theology. They can be wrong all they want. God does not feel the pressure to have to say, "Oh man, I got to make sure they understand this correct." No. He only moves. He is not moved like that. So they have a sacrifice. Verse 24. When the people saw him, so when they saw Samson, they praised their God, for they said, "Our God has given our enemy into our hands." No, Yahweh did. But that's okay. You can be wrong. That's fine. "Our God has given our enemy into our hands, the ravager of our country who has killed many of us." And when their hearts were merry, they said, "Call Samson and let him entertain us." I love this. I love this. Samson now becomes the court jester. He's the clown. He's the entertainment. This big, strong, anointed man from God now becomes the laughingstock of the Philistines. There is a sense of poetic justice. Because let me ask you something. What has Samson been sowing this whole time? And is where he finds himself now, eyes gouged out, no strength, being laughed at by his enemies and being worked to death in the prison, doesn't that sort of fit with how he has lived his life? Because he's supposed to be, it's not that he's just another common Israelite. He is that, but he's also a Nazirite. And on top of that, he is the anointed deliverer of Israel for this time. And he disregards it all. This is what happens. So they called Samson out of the prison, and he performed for them. They made him stand between the pillars. Verse 26. And Samson said to the attendant who held him by the hand, "Let me feel the pillars on which the house rests so that I may lean against them." Now remember, they are in the temple of Dagon, which is the Philistine god, and it's the who's who of the Philistines are there. All the lords of the Philistines, because this is a major victory. They've acquired Samson. They know his the trick to his strength, and they've subdued him. It is like they've subdued Yahweh in their minds. Right? Because if Yahweh was with Samson, he would have delivered him. But we read that Yahweh left him. But that does not mean that the true king of Israel has stepped down from his throne. Because it's a... it's not wise to bring God's instrument into a foreign temple, especially God's hammer. Because what does God do with his hammer? He smashes. So let's keep reading on here. Where did I leave off? 26. Let me feel the pillars on which the house rests so I may lean against them. Verse 27. Now the house was full of men and women. So this is the who's who of all the Philistines. All the lords of the Philistines were there. And on the roof there was about 3,000 men and women who looked on while Samson performed. Then Samson called to Yahweh and said, "Okay, you've been grinding at the mill. Here is your chance for redemption, Samson. You are going to say something that we want you to that we want to hear, where you glorify God, right?" Then Samson called on Yahweh and said, "Lord Yahweh, remember me and strengthen me only this once, O God, so that with this one act of revenge, I may pay back the Philistines for my two eyes." Well, I'm disappointed, but I can't say I'm surprised. Samson acting like Samson. Verse 29, and Samson grasped the two middle pillars on which the house rested, and he leaned his weight against them, his right hand on the one and his left hand on the other. Then Samson said, "Let me die with the Philistines." Samson understands that this sort of is an act of suicide. He knows he's going to die doing this. But he just has to have his revenge for what the Philistines did to him. Okay, Samson, God is the sovereign God of all the universe. He's not intimidated by your misunderstanding. He will still use you. Because what did God say he was going to do at the beginning? I will subdue the Philistines. And he does. Just not in the way we would expect. Then Samson said, "Let me die with the Philistines." He strained with all his might. And the house fell on the lords and all the people who were in it. So those he killed at his death were more than those he had killed during his life. Then his brothers and all his family came down and took him and brought him up and buried him between Zorah and Eshtaol and the tomb of his father Manoah. He judged Israel 20 years. Samson, acting like a Philistine king, dies with the other Philistines. And God delivers Israel from the Philistines. God kept his word. And he exercises his sovereignty in a way only he can. Because through people who aren't even paying attention, who are being rebellious to him, he still uses them in their decisions to bring about his will. So this is what we see in the Samson story, and near the ending here with the Samson and Delilah. Yahweh leaves Samson because he has been sowing so much brutality, treachery, and cunning. He gives him up. We kind of looked at that thing maybe last time about God giving people up. But then the Philistines did something real stupid because they didn't understand what was happening. It was Yahweh who gave him up, not Dagon. Dagon did not give you your victory. It was Yahweh. And they did something very stupid. They brought Yahweh's instrument into a foreign temple, and God, seizing an opportunity, took them all out in one fell swoop. Let's go to the next slide, please. So we've talked about this a little bit before, but here we see it sort of in flying colors. Here's our practical application. Agent or instrument? God is sovereign. He is in control of the events of history, and you are going to be used by God regardless. You have no say. We are the clay. He is the potter. God does not wait for your consent to use you as he chooses. That's just how it is. That's how it's laid out. The question we really have to ask ourselves, are we going to be an agent or an instrument? An agent of God is one who partners with God, who knows God's ways, and who loves God. Now, just from that description, you know Samson is not an agent. Samson is an instrument. An instrument doesn't have a clue, is almost always self-motivated, and has a skewed understanding of God. Every person on the face of the earth that draws breath is at least an instrument of God. Those who call themselves children of God are supposed to move into the agent realm. But as we see through Judges and really through the rest of Scripture, even in our own lives, we know that we don't always operate there. Sometimes we're more like instruments instead of agents. But an instrument does not have a clue and is always self-motivated, and the trajectory of their life shows it. Right? If you're living your life just for you, you're probably going to be miserable because we were never meant to live our life for ourselves. And we see in the Samson story, that guy was miserable. He had one catastrophe to the next. And what did he try to do? He tried to solve it all with sex. Yeah, that didn't work out for you, Samson. But in the end, God is still sovereign because he is the one who is in control of the events of history and uses everyone. We get to choose what level do we want to partner with God. Now I'm going to go to Psalm 103, verse 7 real quick. This is just a real brief scripture, but it sort of helps us understand this in a different way. Psalm 103, verse 7. This is talking about God. He made known his ways to Moses, his acts to the people of Israel. Every person, whether you're an agent or an instrument, will be used by God. Everyone is loved by God, and everyone sees God's mighty Acts. Think about the Red Sea. Pharaoh was there. He saw it. Pharaoh and his army. And so were the Israelites. They saw it too. They saw the mighty acts of God. They had that testimony. But who knew his ways? Moses. It's also to Moses that God said, I will be with you. Do you see how these things are lining up? These are root principles of how God works in this world. And it's important to understand so that you can walk as God's agent. Moses was partnered with God and knew his ways and loved him. And we see that coming out in Psalm 103 because it says here, he made known his ways to Moses. Whereas the people, they just saw the sea parting. They didn't understand what was going on or the God who was doing it for them. Because in case you didn't know, at that time, the Exodus narrative was really important, but all of the plagues were sort of a counter to the Egyptian gods at that time. It was kind of like a wholesale saying, Yahweh is greater than anything else you can think of. No god at that time claimed to have power over the weather, over the sea like that. So when Yahweh backs them up against the sea and has the pillar of the cloud and the fire by day and by night and is separating Pharaoh's army from the people of Israel, everyone thought God's going to burn up the Egyptians. Because we've never heard of a God who has the power over the sea. Because remember, they were in Egyptian bondage 400 years. You think they didn't take on some of those gods and some of that understanding? But Yahweh had the definitive act, and he said, I am like nothing you have ever known. There is no one but me. Walk on dry ground. And he did what no other god has ever claimed to do. He parted the seas, and the people passed through. That's why the Exodus event is such a critical salvation act in the Old Testament, up until really when he brings his people back to the promised land after kicking them out. But Judges sets up why he has to kick them out, because they're not being his people. Anyways, what are you going to do? You're going to be an agent or an instrument? I can tell you that you're going to have pain and suffering regardless. That's just how life is. We know that. But partnering with God, the pain is used in a way to shape you more into the likeness of Jesus so that you can be his hands and feet. Instruments just suffer. I mean, Samson suffered. I can't say that the pain was used to redeem him, because his very last act and cry to God is, give me revenge. That does not sound like someone who knows the ways of God. And so we see this happening. So you really need to be thinking, because you have a clear picture in Judges of what it looks like when things go bad. Of what it looks like when you're an instrument instead of an agent. I strongly recommend be an agent. It's not easy, and there's a lot of pain and suffering involved, but there is in life just in general. Why not have that pain and suffering be channeled so that you can become more like God, right, like Jesus, and to really show his ways in this world? That's how you're going to be fulfilled as a person. Okay, let's go to the next slide, please. So what do we learn? The downward spiral is really the way of the world. Israel had the perfect opportunity to not do that. We saw that when they came in the book of Joshua. They came in and occupied the land. They were doing pretty good. But then they went the way of the world because they didn't listen to God in kicking out the people. The downward spiral shows us the way of the world so that we can have a proper testimony of it and choose not to do it, choose not to live it. Another thing we learn is God is sovereign. He's in control. It looked like things were out of control in the Samson story, but what God said, God did. He said he's going to deliver Israel out of the hands of the Philistines, and he did. Not in the way Samson probably wanted, but he did. So we get to choose whether we're going to be an instrument or an agent. An agent is so much better than an instrument, because I don't want to be a hammer, because hammers break things, they smash. It's not fun. And as Jack would say, how'd he say? I don't want to mess it up now. If you're going to be stupid, you better be tough. I really don't want to have to be a tough guy. In this instance, I'd rather be an agent. All right, let's go to the next slide, please. So for next time, we're going to get into the ending of Judges. And so at the beginning, we looked at the prologue. Now we're going to look at the epilogue. And it's long. It's, you know, chapter 17 to verse 21. So be sure to read it, though, because it is just more of the same. It's the downward spiral. But now we're starting to see it like on a corporate scale. And it's just horrific. But please read that. We're going to look at that next time. And then the session after that is probably one of the most important sessions. That's where the redemption comes in. Because Judges is such a stark and bleak book, but it gives us the truth. But when we move forward from Judges and we look at Ruth and 1 Samuel, we get a correction of this horrible paradigm. We get taken out of the downward spiral and we learn what it looks like when a godly man meets a foreign woman and the woman takes on the god of the man instead of the other way, how it's supposed to be. So God corrects the paradigm. And so it's real important, the very last session you come, because if you only had all of this up until this point, it's just death and destruction. But our God is not death and destruction. He is life. But he lets us the death and destruction so we can appreciate the life. So please be sure to come to that. But a couple things I want you to think about. In chapter 17 and 18, we see the religious decline. This is something we looked at in the prologue. So compare those two. What does the religious decline in the prologue look like? And what does it look like in the epilogue? How do those two compare? And then also, in chapters 19 through 21, we see the political decline. So this is the people-to-people friction. There's an atrocity that happens. It's pretty apparent to pick up on what this atrocity is in chapter 19. What is their solution for it? Think about how they're choosing to deal with this atrocity. Because that's the epitome of the downward spiral right there. But think about those things. Be sure to read it, and we will pick up with that next time. So let's go ahead and close out in a word of prayer. So Jesus, I thank you that you allow us to come together. I pray that anything that is spoken that is of you would just take root in us, and anything that is not would just pass to the ground. I just ask that you would bless us in our day moving forward, and all those who are listening online, you would bless them too. And you just be with us. Amen.